So, hello. We have here with me today Nick Andrews, and we're going to be talking about a couple of cases that we've seen here at the Housing Ombudsman. But first, to introduce myself, so I'm Victoria King, I'm Sector Learning and Development Lead here at the Housing Ombudsman. And Nick, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, of course, Vic. I'm Nicola Andrews. I'm an adjudicator at the Housing Ombudsman Service. I've been here since November 2022, so relatively new. And my role is to investigate complaints that residents bring to us after they've gone through the landlord's own internal complaint process. So when they remain dissatisfied with the final response they've received from their landlord. So obviously the Housing Ombudsman is fair and impartial, and I follow these principles by reviewing what's happened and looking at the landlord's own policy and procedures, listening to any impact on the resident as a result of the situation, and then basing my final determination on all the evidence provided. If there are failings, I make orders and recommendations for redress for the resident and to resolve the issues, and for landlords also to learn from the case and improve any future service delivery.
Brilliant. Thank you, Nick. And that's why we're here today, because we're sharing some good things that have been happening in the casework that you've seen. So you've got two cases. Would you like to share the background of the first case that we're talking about today?
Yeah, sure. So the first case was a complaint about the landlord's handling of the resident reports of antisocial behaviour, an old favourite of ours. We also considered the landlord's complaint handling in this case as well. So the bit of background, really, the resident was an assured tenant of the landlord, and the landlord was a housing association. The landlord was aware that the resident has a neurodiverse disorder and poor mental health, and the resident himself also acknowledged that he was or could be sensitive to noise. So he started reporting issues with his neighbour back in 2013. And issues range from instances of dog muck appearing in his garden and he didn't know who was doing it. It definitely wasn't him because he hasn't got a dog. Some name calling by neighbours and a neighbour particularly doing DIY in the evening, which was disturbing him, and he heard quite often intermittent banging every day, he said, and every evening. In 2020, the issues escalated quite a bit for him, and he did tell the landlord that he reported quite a lot of things to them. In 2021, he told the landlord he was anxious whenever he spoke to them, and he also told her he felt their emails back to him were quite sharp. They were his words. He did say that he was avoiding reporting things because he did never know what response he was going to get. When he said he was sensitive to noise, he also did his own investigation into that, and he had family members come and listen to what he was experiencing, and they also said it was too loud. So he did do something himself to try and see if it was him being overly sensitive to the noise that was happening. The landlord didn't respond particularly well to his reports. They didn't set agree an action plan with him, so there was no expectations set for him. They didn't give any realistic time scales for him. They didn't review the case regularly, so he was having to chase them up all the time, even though he'd said that was particularly triggering for him because he felt the emails were sharp and he felt he was always worried about what response he was going to get. He took the landlord's word as, they were definitely going to do something on this particular date. And sometimes if they didn't do it on that date, he would chase them up again, which resulted in it again in feeling anxious. What he also did was reported his antisocial behaviour via a complaint, but it was clear from the information that I'd received back that there was a misunderstanding there because the landlord took the resident's communication as a report of antisocial behaviour and not a complaint about how they handled it. And we quite often see that at the Ombudsman during our case handling, and it is something that I think landlords need to be particularly aware of when they are responding to residents' reports, that clarity around Are you making a complaint about how we've dealt with something, or do you want to report something for us to deal with? That landlords really need to consider that, because that misunderstanding led to a delay for him. It caused him additional distress and inconvenience, and of course it's time and trouble as well. And the landlord had said in the stage two response that there was no impact on him, and that was a further failing because they didn't recognise the impact on him, or actually they didn't ask him what the impact had been. And that was despite a really explicit letter from his GP setting out what the impact was having on the resident, and the resident saying on several occasions that his mental health was really affected by what was happening.
Thank you, Nick. That's okay. A really good overview. So what did you find? What orders did we make? What recommendations did you give?
So I found that there was maladministration for the landlord's response to his reports of antisocial behaviour. And I found there was also maladministration with the complaint handling. So they were my orders. They were my determinations, sorry. And the orders that are made within 4 weeks of the date of this report, I said a senior member of the landlord's staff to write to the resident to apologise for the failings identified by the investigation. The report to be shared with the landlord's senior management team, because it's important that all the team involved in the landlord recognise that the issues that's been happening. To pay the resident compensation. We break down the compensation in terms of the time and trouble that he's experienced, the distress that he's being caused, and the complaint handling failures. Within 8 weeks of the report, the landlord to complete a full case review to identify how he failed to deliver a responsive service to the resident on that occasion. And within 12 weeks of the date of the report, the landlord to develop an action plan based on the above case review to identify learning and necessary improvements. I also recommended, and this was really important for the resident, and I'll come to a bit of his feedback in a minute, but I also recommended that the landlord seek advice from neurodiverse disorder specialists to inform its communication and approach for its neurodiverse customers, particularly for circumstances involving antisocial behaviour or legal proceedings. I discussed that quite a bit with the resident before I made the order, and he was really pleased that we'd put that in, because he felt a lot that his approach to things or his response to things was really determining his relationship with the landlord, and they didn't understand how he would respond to things. Sometimes it was because of his disorder, as opposed to he wasn't shouting at them, he wasn't aggressive, he was quite blunt in his approach, and they needed to understand that better. So that was an order that he was particularly pleased to have put in place. I also told the landlord to review its ASB policy and introduce a harm-based risk assessment. So to establish a first point of contact if the residents require any additional support because of their vulnerabilities. So they assess that when they first approach the landlord, but that assessment should be reviewed as the case progresses, because things can happen as the case progresses which might, maybe they didn't need support at first, but actually as things go on they might need things, or as other things happen in their life they might need additional support. Also ask the landlord to consider the findings of the Ombudsman's own spotlight on noise complaints, and to share the findings with relevant staff, including training, and to incorporate the findings into future management of cases. So quite a hefty chunk of orders there, really, but I think all of them are resolution focused. So all of them should go some way to helping landlords to deal with instances of noise nuisance.
Thanks, Nick. So they have a lot to do. What did they do in response to our orders and our recommendations?
Very, very quickly, what was really stood out for me, very, very quickly, a senior member of the staff, so they were told to write to the resident. They did write to the resident and apologised, but they also asked, could they meet with him really quickly to give a personal apology as well, which I think went a long way for the resident to try and reconcile the relationship with the landlord, which was obviously slightly fractured at that point. So that went a long way for the resident, and he told me that's how he felt. The apology was really good in that it set out very clearly the failings and didn't call them anything other than failings, so recognise that they had failed on this instance, and not that the ombudsman said we've done this wrong or the ombudsman, it was like, no, we have failed. It was that ownership, I think, that came through on that letter that was particularly important. And it also set out what it was going to do to put things right, which I think, again, was important for the resident to understand, because he was very concerned, particularly about other residents who maybe have neurodiverse disorders, particularly about that group of residents, thinking about how they'd be treated in future and how things would be put in place that maybe would help them as a result of the experience that he's had. What stood out for me was, again, the apology was sincere and well set out and acknowledged the failings. They reviewed the case and sent through a good lessons learnt log. The home visit was really good, and that confirmed its commitment to build on the relationship, which was, again, important for the landlord. The ombudsman's there for a relatively short time for the resident and the landlord in trying to look at the investigation and put the orders in place. But the resident's relationship with the landlord is very unique in that it lasts a long time. So it's important that we maybe put something in that might build on that relationship and try and build on it and repair it going forward. Also the training and the involvement of the staff. When they did the training, they involved the staff in the case review on what good looks like. And it was across the piece. It was, you know, multi departments involved in that. When we looked at the membership of who'd attended, so they were sharing good practice right across the organization. And of course, the big one for me was neurodiverse training to gain a better understanding of how the conditions affect people differently and how situations affect people differently. We all react differently to different things, and just that bit of understanding can go a long way.
Thank you, Nick. So okay. What are the, I know you've talked there a little bit about that really sincere apology, mm-hmm. that lessons learned log, that sharing what had happened with other to learn from that as well. What learning could other landlords take from this example?
I think the big learnings, obviously the sincerity and the empathy we've spoke about, but also look for the flags. For me, it's the GP had sent a letter, he sent two letters actually, saying things weren't good for the resident at that time. Look out for them and have something in place to make sure that they're not just in somebody's in tray somewhere, and make sure you respond to them, because they're really good flags to say things aren't good, things need sourcing. The resident's email as well, to say the tone of the emails was sharp. So think about, the landlord should be thinking about what quality checks they've got in place to monitor outgoing emails and things. Very much sometimes letters are quality checked, but actually emails, are they? If somebody's saying the tone's sharp, so what have we got in place? Do you have a style? Does the landlord have a style, a particular way of responding? And ask residents for the feedback about the style and tone of their communication. Because if one person's finding it sharp, maybe others are as well. And there might be something that you can do just to get some really good email notes or something just to share with your team members to make sure that the tone isn't considered sharp and they're responding. Also, quick compliance is always a good one. I think when residents have gone through the complaints process and they've come through the ombudsman process as well, when a landlord really takes on board the comments and complies with the orders quickly, that goes a long way to show that they're really serious about resolving the issues and they really want to build on that relationship with their residents again. And look, listen to the feedback, what the residents are given. You know, if they're coming back to us saying they're still not happy about certain things, actually, what else do we need to do? I think that's really good messages for other landlords.
So having that quality assurance for written correspondence, regardless of whether it's a letter or an email, and maybe having that email etiquette that
I think some organisations do have email etiquette or letter etiquette, but actually sometimes it's a little bit forgotten on emails because they are a mm-hmm. quick way of message. But actually we do a lot of correspondence now by email, so there should be at least some monitoring of style and tone if people are flagging up that it's an issue.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Nick. So you talked a little bit about what you'd spoken to the resident throughout the case and you'd given some of his feedback. Is there anything else that he said that you'd want to share that particularly stood out for him?
Yeah, what he said to me. So he wrote, and I always, it's so lovely for our job, for anyone's job, I think. But when somebody takes the time and trouble and effort to write and just thank you for the work that you've done, it makes you feel like, you know, you've really tried to help and you've really done your best. So he wrote and he thanked me for the report and the determination letter. He said I'd done a really good job, which made me feel great. And he said I've shown understanding of his particular case and I've picked up on some very good points. So I think that was really important to him. I discussed the case with him later. He was particularly pleased about the neurodiverse training. As I said, he felt he was often misunderstood and hoped that the awareness raising training would help with that. He didn't want to be misunderstood. He didn't want to come across in that way. And he hoped that, you know, by training and better awareness, that had sort of removed some of them barriers that he felt he was facing. And he was also really positive about the ongoing relationship with his landlord. And that was because of the apology and the visit. He said he didn't expect to get that the way he did. And he was really grateful for it.
Well, thank you, Nick.
Okay.
So you've got another case as well.
I have, yeah.
Do you like to share the background of this case?
Yeah, so unsurprisingly, it's another noise complaint, but slightly different than the first one I discussed, because this was a noise transference case due to laminar flooring in the flat above. So this one, the resident in this case, he reported noise from the flat above due to the laminar flooring. We'd also looked at the landlord's response to reports that he'd made of discrimination, and we looked at the landlord's complaint handling. So the resident in this case, he lived in a flat, and conditions of the lease was that the landlord would provide a carpet or other such flooring. He'd lived there for a while, and the neighbours above had approached him about noise when he'd had visitors, and he'd apologised and he said he'd stopped having visitors. About a year later, he could hear loud banging coming from the flat above and furniture being moved around. It went on for over a week. He approached his landlord, who advised him to send a note to his neighbours. And he did. And he said, I want to sort it out amicably, but, you know, the noise has been really bad. Shortly after that time, the neighbours had a baby and there was quite a lot of noise that he could hear. About a year later, when the child was a toddler, he could hear running around and banging, and he said he just couldn't cope with it anymore. So the landlord told him that they couldn't get involved when he approached them. They said, in their words, children are naturally exuberant and carpet was not a requirement of the tenancy. So he also reported another three occasions when his neighbours approached him because he'd been banging on the floor up to them, and he'd reported them to the landlord. So he said they were aggressive and he felt they were harassing him. Sometime later, the neighbour reported to the landlord that the resident had banged on the ceiling and it frightened the child. And the landlord spoke to him about this straight away, and he said it made him feel reprimanded. He said he'd begged his neighbour to install carpets, but they'd refused. In a short space of time, he contacted his MP and he also contacted a solicitor asking for help. He paid himself for solicitor's help to try and get some advice on what else he could do, because he just didn't know which way to go. The landlord asked him to appoint his own sound insulation person to investigate and to look at reducing the noise transference, so maybe give them some advice about that. The final response they sent to his complaint did acknowledge there was some failings and did acknowledge some compensation, but it failed to explain its decision to get involved when the neighbour made a report and not when he made reports. And that was something that really irked him, if you like. He'd been reporting things for a long time, including claims that he was harassed and neighbours had been aggressive towards him. But when he banged on the ceiling, the landlord approached him straight away, although the landlord had said they couldn't get involved when he'd approached them. So he didn't feel that the landlord had considered the impact the noise was having on him. And it also, by suggesting he incur his own costs to check soundproofing levels, when that was their responsibility, they could have helped him with that. He felt that was unfair. He said he wasn't making any noise at all. The neighbour was making a noise and he was the one going to incur the expense. He said he was distressed, and although the landlord did apologise in its complaint handling, it didn't acknowledge the impact that its actions had had on the resident. And it also didn't demonstrate that it took the resident's reports of discrimination and bias seriously and investigated them thoroughly.
Thanks, Nick. Really good overview there again. So what did you find? What recommendations did you make? What orders did you make?
I found maladministration for the landlord's response to his noise reports, maladministration for the landlord's response to his allegations of discrimination and bias, and service failing for its complaint handling. The maladministration for the noise complaints, they just didn't investigate his side of it. They asked him to deal with things themselves. They gave mixed messages. They asked him to deal with things. They said they would deal with things if he got his own sound insulation. They said there was a problem with the floor, but they weren't proactive in trying to get that assessment done themselves. They also responded really quickly to the neighbour's report when the resident had done something, but it wasn't consistent in their approach really to him. So it was maladministration for that. They had their values on all their letters and on their websites and everything. One of their values was inclusion. And they had a really, really robust equality, diversity and inclusion policy. But they didn't seem to investigate the reports that the resident clearly made, that he felt he was being discriminated against, and he felt that the landlord was showing clear bias towards him. So I found maladministration for that and service failings for the complaint handling. The orders are made. I said a senior member of the landlord's staff to apologise in writing to the resident for the failings identified. The resident was paid an element of compensation. I instructed them to order a specialist acoustic surveyor to assess the current soundproof levels, and if any failings are identified, to then provide any appropriate recommendations to improve noise transference. And I told the landlord to share the findings with the resident and the ombudsman as well. I asked the landlord to review its process for managing allegations of discrimination and bias to ensure that all allegations are recorded, investigated thoroughly, and the complainant is given a comprehensive response. So whilst, just to be clear, Victoria, whilst I'd made the maladministration finding for the discrimination allegations, that's not to say that I found that discrimination occurred. What my finds, and that's not our role as the ombudsman, we don't say if something occurred, we just assess the landlord's response to the reports. So in this case, the landlord hadn't followed its own policy by fully investigating it and given a comprehensive response to the resident when he'd made the reports. The landlord to review the case to fully understand the failings and develop an action plan to ensure situations are managed effectively going forward, and the landlord to review its domestic noise and neighbour nuisance policy, considering the learnings from this case, and ensure it's fit for purpose and staff are trained to use it effectively.
Lovely, thank you, Nick.
Okay.
So what did the landlord do in response to those orders and recommendations? What were its next steps?
So again, the letter of apology, and what I really liked about this letter of apology, it was very clear, and it was entitled letter of apology. There was no mistaking what it was. There was no way a resident could receive it and think, oh, it's just a follow up to my complaint or something. In big letters at the top, it was letter of apology. And I think that was really, that stood out for me, because I hadn't seen one like that before. And other landlords could maybe learn from that and just being a little bit clearer. I've seen some letters of apology and you would struggle to understand if it was an apology or just an update. So I think that was a really good one. And the lessons learned log, it was really good example of shared work again across departments. They clearly identified the issues that we'd said they'd failed on. Then they assessed each issue, and you could see it was, you know, the minutes, if you like, of who was there and what they said, so how they thought and interacted, because complaints of noise cross over other departments. So you've got your housing management teams, you've got your repairs and maintenance teams, maybe your property investment teams, and your ASB team sometimes. So actually, to have them all involved in the same room, it just gave that shared learning, if you like. So I thought it was a really good approach. And it also demonstrates that they were considering good practice, because they brought some good practice examples to the forum as well, to look at how they were going to incorporate that in their policies and procedures. And then they self-assessed against our Ombudsman Spotlight on noise. So they sent us that. And they also sent a link to one of their policies that they reviewed on the basis of this case. They sent that link to the residents, so that was just an additional level of reassurance that actually they've reviewed the policy, and here's a copy, you know, for your reference, to see that the bits that you complained about have now been incorporated in our policy on how we deal with things. So I thought that was a really good example, and one that other landlords could learn from.
It just shows that importance of reviewing complaints that landlords are getting themselves and digging down into the issues, because things are evolving and changing all the time, and that policy obviously needed updating. So it makes you think, if you're not digging into all of those complaints, how do you know that your policy is still relevant and it's impactful for residents?
Absolutely. You don't know sometimes what you don't know, do you? So it is really good when you see something. And I think that was why I was particularly keen to do this, because, you know, we do find maladministrations and severe maladministrations, but we also do get some really good compliance from landlords. And I think, you know, it's not always an easy job. We know that in housing management. So sometimes when we get some good practice, it's really important for us to flag up that good practice and say, have you thought about maybe doing it this way? So that was why I was keen, say, to try and get some of them messages out.
So be hearing more from Nick in the future then on these podcasts. Well,
I don't know about that. You might invite me again.
Oh, no, you've done a sterling job there. Thank you very much for sharing those cases with us, Nick, and look forward to speaking with you on future podcasts.
Thank you.
Thank you.